Hello.
Hello there.
Blah, 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 blah. Okay. I'm Alana Medlock. I'm your host for There, There. There, There.
Hello. How are you? Nice day, isn't it? Good to see you. Hey, hello. How are you today? Hello there. Is that a new hat?
A quarterly audio essay about performance. Produced for WGXC 90.7 FM and streaming online at WGXC.org.
You are a good guy. Have a nice day.
So, you may be wondering, what do you mean exactly by performance? I'm thinking about it pretty broadly, but not in terms of, say, a car or a stock portfolio. Theater, dance, performance art, radio, television, film, and music. Any event, really, created for an audience that is time-based. I thought I would start off this first broadcast thinking about the idea of presence. Presence is something necessary for a performance, a basic idea. But what is it? What is presence? Merriam-Webster's dictionary defines presence as the fact or condition of being present, and they define present as, quote, being in view or at hand. Or alternatively, quote, existing in something mentioned or under consideration. I like to think of presence as a collaboration between spectator and subject.
These records were made by me, Gertrude Stein, at Columbia University, January 30th, 1935. This portrait that I'm reading now is one of Matisse. It was written many years ago when I first knew him. Matisse. One was quite certain that for a long part of his being one being living, he had been trying to be certain that he was wrong in doing what he was doing. And then when he could not come to be certain that he had been wrong in doing what he had been doing, when he had completely convinced himself that he would not come to be certain that he had been wrong in doing what he had been doing, he was really certain then that he was a great one, and he certainly was a great one. Certainly, everyone could be certain of this thing, that this one is a great one. This one was one very many were knowing, some, and very many were glad to meet him. Very many sometimes listened to him. Some listened to him very often. There were some who listened to him, and he talked then, and he told them then that certainly he had been one suffering, and he was then being one, trying to be certain that he was wrong in doing what he was doing, and he had come then to be certain that he never would be certain that he was doing what was wrong for him to be doing then. And he was suffering then, and he was certain that he would be one doing what he was doing, and he was certain that he should be one doing what he was doing, and he was certain that he would always be one suffering. And this then made him certain, this, that he would always be one being suffering, this made him certain that he was expressing something being struggling. And certainly very many were quite certain that he was greatly expressing something being struggling. This one was knowing some who were listening to him. And he was telling very often about being one suffering. And this was not a dreary thing to anyone hearing that then. It was not a saddening thing to anyone hearing it again and again. To some, it was quite an interesting thing, hearing it again and again. To some, it was an exciting thing, hearing it again and again. Some knowing of this one and being certain that this one was a great one and that was one clearly expressing something were ones hearing this one telling about being one being living, were hearing this one telling this thing again and again. Some who were ones knowing this one and were ones certain that this one was one who was clearly telling something, was a great man, were not listening very often to this one telling and again about being one being living. Certainly some who were certain that this one was a great man and one clearly expressing something and greatly expressing something being struggling were listening to this one telling about being living, telling about this again and again and again. Certainly very many knowing this one and being certain that this one was a great man and that this one was clearly telling something were not listening to this one telling about being living, were not listening to this one telling this again and again.
Hello, I'm Susan Nelson Howell, and you are listening to the Divas in Training Sublineal Thought Persuasion Program, Stage Presence and Charisma. Soon you will be relaxed by the gentle sounds of the ocean. Consciously, you will hear only waves, while your deeper subconscious mind tunes into positive messages spoken just below the conscious hearing level. Listen to the Sublineal Persuasion Program, Stage Presence and Charisma, every day for the first 30 days to achieve maximum impact, and then continue listening as comfortable for a healthy maintenance program. I am a powerful performer. I love an audience. My energy flows freely on stage. I have an incredible stage presence. All fear of audiences are disappearing. I possess an enormous power and stage presence. I'm developing a unique personal presence.
Did we get the mad assassin yet, or is he still lurking out there?
I think they fixed his bulb. They tried.
They fixed his bulb.
Sure did. You had an interesting theory that, I'm not sure what this is. You said that there are various theories about the way performers win over audiences, and I was fascinated with that.
I'll have to make a tiny little speech about that.
Please do.
Tiny one.
But it's very good.
Because, you see, audiences, in the real sense of the word, are disappearing. There are almost none left. It's an endangered species.
Everybody's on?
No. You see, this isn't an audience here. No.
False pretense?
No. It's wonderful, lovely people, and we're so grateful for you, but you're not an audience. You got in free. And not only did you get in free, but you know, as does every studio audience, that you are not here to do anything except be a member of the cast and to help us look good.
Oh, have you ever seen
a television show where the audience booed and hissed or refused to applaud?
It's always
a big hit on television, isn't it? Because the people who come to the show know that they're part of the cast and have to help us not to look ridiculous.
Yeah.
Our real audience is two or three people in a living room scattered all over the place, but that isn't a real audience.
No.
An audience is a big, many-headed beast crouching out there in the darkness. In the situation comedies, you know, they have a little black box full of laughter. And they add that to the jokes. And you know that most of the people laughing on that box died long ago. Now think, when you see your next sitcom and you hear those merry peals of laughter echoing out of the graveyard.
But
you could seduce an audience if you're a seducer, or you can dominate them, or you can win them over sweetly. It depends on the audience. It depends on you.
You people can watch while I'm scrubbing these floors, and I'm scrubbing the floors while you're gawking. Maybe once you tip me and it makes you feel swell in this crummy southern town, in this crummy old hotel, but you'll never guess to who you're talking. No, you could never guess to who you're talking. Then one night there's a scream in the night and you wonder who could that have been. And you see me kind of grinning while I'm scrubbing. And you say, what she got to grin? I'll tell you, there's a ship. The black freighter with a skull on its masthead will be coming in. You gentlemen can say, hey gal, finish them floors, get upstairs, what's wrong with you, earn your keep here. You toss me your tips and look out to the ships, but I'm counting your heads as I'm making the beds, 'cause there's nobody gonna sleep here tonight. Nobody's gonna sleep here, honey. Nobody. Nobody. Then one night, there's a scream in the night, and you say, who's that kicking up a row? And you see me kinda staring out the window, and you say, what's she got to stare at now? I'll tell you, there's a ship, the Black Freighter, turns around in the harbor, shooting guns from her bow. Now, you gentlemen can wipe off that smile off your face, 'cause every building in town is a flat one. This whole frickin' place will be down to the ground, only this cheap hotel standing up safe and sound. And you yell, why do they spare that one? Yes, that's what you say. Why do they spare that one? All the night through, through the noise and to-do, you wonder who is that person that lives up there. And you see me stepping out in the morning, looking nice with a ribbon in my hair. And the ship, the Black Freighter, runs a flag up its masthead and a cheer rings the air. By noontime, the dock is a-swarming with men coming out from the ghostly freighter. So still at the dock, you can hear foghorn miles away, and in that quiet of death, I'll say, right now. And I'll say, that'll learn ya. And the ship, the Black Freighter, disappears out to sea.
is me.
You are listening to WGXC Acred. I'm Alana Medlock, your host for There There, a quarterly audio essay about performance. Earlier, we heard some recordings from a short film by Louis C.K. called Hello There, some music from the Muji store called Talking, composed by Haruomi Hosono. After that, the great Gertrude Stein reading her poem Matisse, recorded for the Columbia University Speech Lab in 1935. An excerpt from a song by the band Mono, titled Are You There? And an excerpt from a training recording on charisma and stage presence for singers by Susan Diane Howell. After that, an excerpt from Orson Welles talking with Dinah Shore on The Dinah Show, and a live recording of Pirate Jenny from the Three Penny Opera in 1965, performed by Nina Simone. I'll be posting my playlist on the broadcast page for this show at wgxc.org.
Now the question arises, can you learn to be present? Or do you just have to wait for just presence to arise? No, you can learn to be present. If you are ready, then you can learn to be present. In daily life, in situations in daily life, you can learn to be present. I already, for example, mentioned in my first book, when you perform routine activities, which usually are just a means to an end, such as washing your hands, making a cup of tea, getting into your car, closing the door, there you can use those routine activities and see if you can be completely present rather than use them as a means to an end, make them into an end in themselves.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Do you think that if you are artistically talented, that experience and working hard can be equally as valid as formal education?
Well, there's no one way one learns. It's still a mystery. But some people learn best through a structured environment. Some people learn best through a free, unstructured environment. But I think in the long run, you learn to walk by walking. So it's the experience of doing whatever you have to do. And so much of education tends to be intellectual and lacking the on-hand experience of the actual doing of something. So you can read a lot of books about how to walk, but you learn to walk by walking.
As you work with performers, do new ideas appear during the rehearsal process, or is everything set out beforehand?
No, I think most of the ideas come about in my work and is in the making of it. I used to be less secure and try to prepare before I would start a rehearsal. And as I got older, I learned that a lot of the things that I would do would be a waste of time because I was trying to make something that was in my head instead of looking at what was at hand, looking at the people in the room, listening to the sound, listening to the music, listening to their voices, watching the way they move. Let the piece talk to me instead of talking to it. So more and more, I think it's better to go in the room with not so many ideas and let the work direct itself.
A good practice is not always to feel you have to fill up the present moment with something, but actually enjoy a present moment that is not filled up with anything. By filling up, I mean external activity or internal activity. So both are kind of filling up the present moment. And on the external, as we mentioned before, of course you have all the devices that humans have invented to help you fill up the present moment, to make it easier not to have any space whatsoever. And you can, there's a, when you do it, you can sense the addictive nature of needing to fill up your inner space. It's an automatic thing. And people are actually afraid of the, to have a moment, they're afraid of having this a moment that's not filled up. Then they feel there's something very wrong. And they might interpret this as, some people even feel anxiety. I should be doing something or thinking something or something wrong. Or they may feel unbearable boredom even after 2 minutes, not doing anything. Or they have something in the head, a mind form that says, you should be doing something. How dare you just sit there? There's so much to do, come on, do something. But you're missing out on something very precious and very vital, and that is experience the depths of life rather than the continuous horizontal extension of life. And you don't have to overdo it, just make it a habit from time to time to enjoy the spaciousness of the present moment, and everything at this moment just is the way it is. And then you, this is the first step of appreciating what's around you, which is a manifestation of life also. And if you're in the mind, you would call it uninteresting, everyday things are happening around me. But if you don't interpret, you might see that there's a certain aliveness and beauty in everything.
Thank you. Romeo is bleeding, not so soon. So on 18th Street as usual, looking so hard against the hood of his car, putting out a cigarette in his hand. Crawled up a chugo that it pumps at Romero's pain body, and seeing how far they can spit. But it was just another night, and now they're huddled in the brake lights of a 58 Bel Air, and listening to how Romeo killed a sheriff with his knife. And they all jump and they hear the sirens. Romeo just laughs. It's all a racket in the world. They ain't never gonna save that copper's ass. He ain't never gonna see another summertime for cutting down my brother and leaving him like a dog beating the car without his knife. Romeo says, hey man, give me a cigarette. And they hurry for that pack. Frankie lights for him, bats him on the back. Throws a bottle in a milk truck, and as it breaks, he grabs his nuts. They all know they could be just like Romeo if they only had the guts. Romeo is bleeding, but nobody can tell. He sings along with the radio with a bullet in his chest. And he combs back his feathers, they all agree it's clear that everything is cool and that Romeo is here. Romeo is bleeding, he winces now and then. Leans against the car door, feels the blood in his shoes. Someone's crying at a fire point in a phone booth by the store. Romeo starts his engines, wipes the blood off the door. And it brought his shooting signal with a radio flu blast. Even the boys are hiking up their chinos. And they all try to stand like Romeo with their moon cut like a sickle. Now they're talking now in Spanish, all about their hero.
You're listening to There There. I'm your host, Alana Medlock, and this is WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre. In the last section, I just played a couple clips from a talk by German-Canadian author and spiritual teacher Eckhart Tolle about the power of presence. Then we heard a clip from an interview with American theater director Robert Wilson, and that was from a documentary called Absolute Wilson, followed by an excerpt from his production of the opera Einstein on the Beach, which was composed by Philip Glass and premiered in 1978. After that, we heard a short excerpt from a performance of Crap's Last Tape, a play by Samuel Beckett and performed by the actor John Hurt. And just now, Romeo is Bleeding by Tom Waits from his album Small Change.
Poems, or any piece of writing, are loaded artifacts whose meaning can be easily lost if the poet does not mediate the process of creating meaning around the work.
So, presence is something that a performer embodies, but it is also something that is conjured in a space. Presence is required for something to happen, for something to exist. Sometimes the process of creating presence is a process of layering.
I'm gone. I mean, when I'm really gone. I don't want you to listen to any talk about inevitabilities, God's grand design. And how wonderful is the change and challenge provided by that great opportunity called death. Turn a deaf ear to such sound advices. You've got to learn to let go. Get on now with your own show. Think renewal. Think release. Think gratitude to God. Think circles of eternity. Think peace. Turn a deaf ear to such sound advice, especially from the mouths of other women. I expect you to scream, cry, call back your love. Me, of course. Curse fate, claw death, rail and wail. Fall out over the gasket. Express remorse that you didn't do, care, give me more. Unworthy, that's the word. That you were unworthy. And then beg God to bring me back and give you another chance. I tell you now, while we make merry, while I've still got left a few more breaths, I don't like neat deaths. Polite acceptances. A dab and a tear. And a restrained sip of sherry. Go hit yourself in the head with a hammer. Blood streaming for all the world to see. Howling, why, Lord, why? Instead of her lying there, it should have been me.
Suppose I die first.
You wouldn't dare.
How does Ruby Dee want to be remembered?
Let me see. How do I want to be remembered? I think I'd like to be remembered. One of the ways is that I'd like to be remembered because I believe that human beings are like the members of a cosmic orchestra. Each of us has a vibration and a sound. Each of us is a different instrument. And that what, as an actor, I'm supposed to do is to hear the sounds and the silences, find the rhythms of the people. This is what I do now with the books. Hear the what melody describes. And so, because this is how, when we talk about peace on earth, we talk about everybody ultimately deciding, oh, I'm this particular instrument with this particular vibration, and I belong in this part of the cosmic orchestra. And all our little, we will be done with all of our teeny toys and get on to the large assignment, and then we will come to fulfill the large assignment. The divine mandate, I think, is where we're headed. And if something like that could be encapsulated and put on my tombstone, I said, because that's what I'd like to be remembered as, knowing, oh, that's what I'm on, we're on Earth for. Oh, sure. Oh, she had an idea what we're put on Earth for.
Ruby Dee, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Harold.
In the last section, we heard a short clip from a promo video for Between Absence and Presence with the South African writers Unathi Slasha and Sisonke Papu. Later on, the song Gabe's New Joint by Auntie Balas from the album Toka Teeth. After that, When I'm Gone, performed by the actors Ruby Dee and Ossie Davis, and a clip from an interview with Ruby Dee for the Archive of American Television. To be continued. I'm going to leave you with a recording that I love, a cover of Borderline, the song by Madonna performed by the Flaming Lips with Stardeath and the White Dwarfs. The dynamics in this recording and the way it builds creates an event, a presence that's undeniable in some way. I'm Alana Medlock, and this has been There There on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Hudson, and Catskill, airing the fifth Thursday of the month from 2 to 3 p.m. and streaming online at WGXC.org. I'll be back on August 31st. Thanks for listening. Thank you.